The shiur tonight is titled The First of the Pairs. So tonight we're going to begin a shiur on the zugos. So just a little historical background of the zugos. So the first pair, set of pairs, was Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan. Now the book that we're following, the main rabbi that they discuss is Yossi ben Yoezer, not so much Yossi ben Yochanan. But the first pair of zugos was Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan. And the time period was the 2nd century BCE, which was the beginning of the Hashmonaim dynasty, the Maccabees. So at the time, just some historical background, Antiochus Epiphanes, who was the head of the Seleucid Empire, he was in control of Eretz Yisrael, and he was promoting Hellenization amongst the Jews, that the Jews should adopt Greek culture, Greek philosophy. And at that time, the area was so corrupt that they were buying, the Kohen Gadol was a bought position. It was no longer one that came about through merit, but it was bought. So the first person to buy the position was Jason the priest, that's the English, and he was the Kohen Gadol. And part of the deal was that he paid to become the Kohen Gadol. And the deal was that in doing so, he would promote Hellenization, which is what happened. And then after him, there was another priest with a Greek name, Menelaus. So Menelaus followed Jason, and he paid an extra 300 coins to Antiochus, and he replaced Jason as the Kohen Gadol. And I'm still in the history, but it was a big controversy because Menelaus was a Kohen, but he came from a different family. He came from the Bilga family. And normally all the Kohen Gadols had come from Tzadok, but this was an exception, the reason being because he bribed Antiochus to get the position. So I'm just giving you a background as to the nature of the corruption of that time period of the 2nd BCE when the Hashmonaim were starting to... Really, the Greeks were really powerful, and Hellenization was a big problem. So much so that the Kohen Gadols, two of them, had bought the position, and they promoted Hellenization. They really were not keeping Torah properly. But at the same time, you have Yossi ben Yoezer, which is what the book discusses, the first of the Zugos. And he was also a Kohen, and he's known as a Chassid, as we'll see in the Gemaras that we're going to do. And he lived far away from where this process was occurring. So he was kind of isolated from the process of Hellenization. So there's all your background. So again, we're in the 2nd BCE. You have the beginning of the Hashmonaim dynasty. And as such, there's a lot of Greek Hellenization going on. Jewish people were adopting culture, the Greek culture. It was a big corruption of society, so much so that the Mikdash and the Kohanim were corrupted. It was a bought position. And then we come to Yossi ben Yoezer, who was known as a Chassid. He was also a Kohen. And we're going to discuss some of the stories about him and some ideas about Yossi ben Yoezer. So the first...
What is the term Zugot signify?
So they had pairs of leaders that were the Nasi and the Av based in. So there was the leader and the second, and they were that was the structure of the Zugos, of the pairs of leaders of the Jewish people, starting with this. And we're going to go through the different pairs, like Hillel and Shammai, for example. So we're going to go through different pairs, but this was the first pair, basically the first leadership set of Klal Yisrael. And this was, again, we did the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. And the last one was Antigonus Ish Socho. And now we're starting, I'm just following the leadership train. And the next set of leaders was not just one individual, but it was a set. And they started having these sets and pairs of leaders. So Yossi ben Yoezer is going to be the focus of the shiur tonight. So I have three basic gemaras on Yossi ben Yoezer. The first one is based on the Mishnah in Sota. So if you have the source sheets, which I sent out, it's source number one. But if not, if you have a Mishnayos handy, you can get it out. It's Parak Tes, Mishnah Tes. So the Mishnah says, Mishal Rabu Harutz Chanin Batla Egla Rufa. So when there were a lot of murderers in the Jewish people, they had to be Mevatel, the whole process of Egla Rufa. Mishaba Eliezer ben Dinai, Utachina ben Prisha Hayanikra, Chazu Likroso ben Haratzlan. This was in the time of Eliezer ben Dinai, and he also had a name called China ben Prisha, and he had another name, which they called him ben Haratzlan, because there were so many murderers at that time, they called him ben Haratzlan, the son of the murderer. Misharabu Hamina'afim Pasku Hamayim Hamarim. When there was so much adultery in the Klal Yisrael, they got rid of the Sota process. And when was that? Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai Hefsikan Shenemar Lo Efkod Abno Seichem Kisiz Nena Va'Kal Seichem Kisin Afena Kihem V'chule V'gomer. Sorry. So the Mishnah says that there was a period of time where the adultery was so rampant that they had to get rid of Sota. It was there were so many people that would be killed. So they had to get rid of it, and that was in the time of Yochanan ben Zakkai. And there's he quotes a pasuk that indicates that there was this that he's not going to punish the daughters for adultery. And then finally it says Mishamis Yosi ben Yoazer ish Tzreda v'Yosi ben Yochanan ish Yerushalayim. So this is the first zugos. So when these people died, batlu ha'eshkolos, the grape clusters were mevatel, they were nullified. Shneamar. As it says, Ein eshkol lechol bikura osa nafshi. There is no cluster to eat, nor a ripe fig I could desire. So the first two parts of the Mishnah are interesting, but I'm not going to take it up tonight. Really what I want to focus on is the last part, which is that Yosi ben Yoezer and Yosi ben Yochanan, the first set of zugos, it says that when they died, the clusters of grapes were mevatel, they were destroyed. So, of course, the question is, what exactly is the clusters of grapes? I mean, we know that it can't be literal because we have vineyards in Eretz Yisrael and we have wine and we have grapes. So what exactly does it mean that when they died, the clusters of grapes were mevatel? So that's the question. And this will hopefully give us insight into their nature, the nature of their leadership. So in order to answer the question, I think it's important to look at the Gemara on this Mishnah. And the Gemara is quoted in Temura. So in Temura, Daf Tes Vav Amud Beis, it says as follows. So it's source number 2 if you have it, or if not, just take out a Temura. It says Tanan Hasam. It says over there in that Mishnah, in the Mishnah in Sota, Mishameis Yosef ben Yoezer ish Tzreda, Yosef ben Yochanan ish Yerushalayim, Batlu ha'eshkolos. So the grape clusters were mevatel, were nullified. Ha'eshkolos ish shakolbo. So what does it mean, eshkolos? So eshkolos doesn't mean clusters of grapes, but it means ish shakolbo, a man that everything is within them. Look at Rashi, shakolbo, Torah v'yirashchet u'gmilas chasadim. So it's referring to an individual or individuals here that have Torah, yirashchet, and gmilas chasadim. So when Yosi ben Yoezer and Yosi ben Yochanan died, so this type of person died as well. So a type of person that had Torah, yirashchet, and gmilas chasadim. V'amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So it says, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, kol eshkolo she'amdu lahen li'Yisrael mimosh Moshe ad shemes Yosef ben Yoezer. So all the clusters, which is a reference to these types of individuals who existed from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu until Yosi ben Yoezer, which is our set of zugos, hayulamedin Torah ki Moshe Rabbeinu. They learned Torah like Moshe. Mikan ve'elech lo hayulamedin Torah ki Moshe Rabbeinu. But after Yosi ben Yoezer died, they no longer learned Torah like Moshe. So what does that mean? I mean, obviously that's the question. So let's say Rashi. Is there Rashi on this? There is no Rashi. So the Gemara says, the Gemara asks further, V'amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Shloshes Alafim Halachos, Nishtachu B'mei Evlo Shem Moshe. How could you say, hold on one second, there's one of the phones is just, or one of the, can I, I'm just going to mute it. Okay, there we go. Okay, good. All right. So the Gemara says, what about all the Halachos that were lost in the end of Moshe, by Moshe? It says that there were Halachos lost. At the end of when Moshe died, right? So how could they learn like Moshe if these halachos were lost? Did they have these halachos? So the answer is an obvious answer. So it says, "V'amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Shlosh Halachim Halachos Nishtachu Me'Avlosh Moshe Dishtakach Lu Dishtakach Tegmir Luhu Avi Gemiri Kemoshe Rabbeinu." So the ones that were forgotten, but the ones that were learned like Moshe Rabbeinu. Rashi, look at Rashi in source number 3. The ones that were lost were lost. So What it means that they... Hold on one second. What it means is that the ones that were lost were lost. So the ones that they didn't have. But all the other halachos, they learned like Moshe. So what does that mean that they learned like Moshe? So let's keep going. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? The Gemara in Lehu, Havi Gemirik Moshe, right? Vahatanya mishimes Moshe im rabo mitzam in tamuv im rabo tahoran tiharu. Liba de imit migmar Havi Gemirik Lehu kemoshe Rabbeinu. So it says also that after Moshe, they relied on Rov. And if you had Rov that said it was Tameh, it was Tameh. And if you had Rov that said it was Tahor, it was Tahor. So you see that they weren't like Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Gemara's answer is Liba de imit Rashi. Liba de imet halev nismayit lo yu yodin lahachzir osan sheshachachu mitoch pilpol lacha heich v'hayu cholkin bahen v'halchu achar merubin. They had forgotten some aspects of the halacha, and therefore they had to rely on rov. Migmar, so migmar havu gemiri lehu kemoshe rabbeinu. But the ones that they had, the halachos that they had, that they didn't forget or that weren't forgotten and had to be paskin based on rov, those were learned like Moshe Rabbeinu. So the question is, what is this unique characteristic up to Yossi ben Yoezer, which is our first set of Zugos? What does it mean that they learned like Moshe? What exactly is that a reference to? And furthermore, what is the term Eshkolos? So the Gemara says Isha Kolbo, and Rashi says Torah v'yirascheid gmilas chasadim. So there are people, it seems like, after they existed that had these factors. So why are they unique? What's unique about, why are they calling them Eshkolos, all the individuals up to Yossi ben Yoezer, including him? And what does it mean to learn like Moshe? So those are the questions that we're going to take up in order to understand the significance of the first set of Zugos. So just to add something to this, look at Tosfos on the same daf. Tosfos, I should have separated it. I made an error there, but it's really a separate source. Tosfos holds on Temura. He says, Liba de imit, Shaloya lahem leiv lahakshir shechachsam uvaha nechleku. They didn't have the ability to go over that which was lost. And there's machloksim on the halachos. He's referring to the halachos that were lost. Migmar havu gemiri, mash nishtayr lahem, that which was left over, shalo shachachu, that weren't forgotten, havu gemiri bidukya kemosha. They were learned with the exactness of Moshe. So Tosfos adds an extra term that might help us in terms of defining this. But Tosfos' extra additional term is that he holds that it's bidukya, and the exactness, like diuk, the exactness of Moshe. So what exactly does that mean? We have to get more clarity on the concept that they learned like Moshe in the sense of the exactness. And furthermore, we'll try to explain that. That's going to be the question that we're working on. Okay, so we're going to keep going in the same Gemara, because the Gemara adds another story. There's a story here, a weird story. So it says about Yossi ben Yoezer. So it says, "Masnisa Tana." This is right after the previous Gemara. It's the same Gemara. So "Masnisa Tana kol eshkolo she'amdu leYisrael mimos Moshe achemes Yosef ben Yoezer ish treda loya behem shum dofi." So it taught also that until Yossi ben Yoezer, all the eshkolos, all the individuals that were leaders, didn't have any dofi. Rashi says, dofi, look in source number 5. Kesakadaitach, dofi shalchet, lo yab eshkolos, she'amdu parnasim shal Yisrael. So you would think, at this point of the Gemara, that what it means is that they had no flaws. They were perfect. They were perfect individuals. So all the people up to Yossi, from Moshe to Yossi ben Yoezer, all the Bali Masora, had no flaws. They had no issues. Bikan va'elech, chayabahen shum dofi. But after that, they did. So now there's a story here. Vatanya, we see in a brisa, Maisa b'chassid echad shaya goneach melibo. There was this righteous person who was groaning from his heart. He was in pain. V'sha'alu l'rofim v'amru ein lo takana ach yenik chelev roseach shacharis. So they said, he asked the chachamim what he should do about his pain. And they said to him that every morning you should take the milk, you should drink warm milk of a goat. Okay. They view A's, so he brought a goat into his house. The kashrulo, the kraimitaso. So this man who was in pain, he followed Chazal's medical advice, and he grabbed this goat, and he ties it to his bedpost. Haya yonek mimena chalav. So he would feed from it, he would take from it He would literally, it sounds like he would literally breastfeed from this goat, Chalav, because that was the ability for him to get better. Lemachar, so afterwards, Nichnasu Chaverov, his friends came in. Would be embarrassing for most people, Levakro, to visit him. Kevan Shiroa is Amru Listem Mizuyan Besoch Beso. So they weren't shocked by the fact that he had a goat and that he was basically using it to gain milk, but they were shocked that he had this goat in his house because goats are very damaging animals. The goats tend to eat other people's property, and it's really, you're not supposed to have these animals in your house. So he says, V'anu nechtaslam avakro. So they saw this goat and they said, list him, like they're robbers, mezuyan besoch beso, you're sustaining a robber in your house, this goat. V'anu nechtaslam avakro, and we're coming to visit you. Yashvu vadku v'lo matzu bo avon, ela shel oso ha'ez bilvad. So they only found one flaw in this man, this individual, which was that he had taken this goat into his house in order to use it to heal. So v'afhu b'shasmi saso, and this individual said when he died, Amar yodea ani ba'atmi shein bi avon. I know I have no flaw. Elishal oso is bilvad. The only flaw I have is that I took a goat into my house. This is a bizarre story. I took a goat inside my house and I fed off of it. Shavarti al divrei chaverai. I violated a takana de rabbanon. Sharei amru chachamim ein megadlin behima daka be'aretz Yisrael. So the Chacham say you're not allowed to raise a domesticated animal, a behema daka, that would be somewhat damaging to other people's property, like a goat, a small domesticated animal, in your house in Eretz Yisrael. The Kaimalon kol hecha da'amar maisa b'chassid echad. So the Gemara says, so this individual, his only flaw was that he had this goat in his house, which was against the Takanas Chachamim. Which is pretty good, you know? If that's your only flaw, that you take a goat into your house, you're doing pretty well for yourself. But the Gemara says, Kol hecha damar maisa b'chassid echad, O Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, O Rabbi Yehuda bar Yilai. So the Gemara never says who this individual who had no flaws was, but we know through Misora that when the Gemara says chassid, it was either Yehuda ben Bava, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, or Rabbi Yehuda ben bar Yilai. And they lived, v'rabbanan basar Yosef ben Yoezer ish treda dari dari havu. So these individuals who had no flaws except for the goat situation, they actually lived after Yossi ben Yoezer. So the question is, how could Yossi ben Yoezer be the last Eshkol to have no flaw, if that's what it means, in lo dofi, when we see that there are these leaders that came about after Yossi ben Yoezer who were flawless, who had no flaws except for the goat. So how do we make sense of this? So what's the Gemara's answer? So Amar Rav Yosef, dofi shel smicha ksani. So what it's referring to is this dofi of smicha. Smicha meaning not smicha like you're a rabbi, but smicha like by korbanos. So look at Rashi there. It's important Rashi. We'll skip down because the other Rashis are mostly pshat. So dofi shel smicha. Da'ad Yosef ben Yoezer lo nechleku b'smicha v'lo b'shem davar. Until Yosef ben Yoezer, there were no machloksim. There were no arguments at all. Shadayin lo nismay halev, there is no mi'itas halev, like a degradation of the heart. Ulahaki nakat smicha, this is why the Gemara brings in smicha. Dehi haisa machlokes rishona, the first machlokes in the Torah was about smicha. Shneklgu bo chachamim me'olam, that was the first one they ever argued about, smicha, on korbanos. Umi Yosef ben Yoezer ve'ela chayabayin dofi shal smicha, shneklgu b'smicha shlamim, b'yom tov, k'darminan b'chagiga. And after him, this machlokes continued as to whether you should do smicha, put your hands on a korban shlamim on Yom Tov, like it says in Chagiga, Shamay Omer lismoch, v'hil Omer shal lismoch. You see that this was the first machlokes. So the first machlokes in Torah Shabbal Peh occurred with Yosef ben Yoezer. So the Gemara says, Ein lo dofi. The Gemara says that that Yosef ben Yoezer didn't have any flaws. But it doesn't mean flaws. It says, in lo dofi shal smicha ksani. It's referring to the lack of machloksim. So the Gemara says, v'ha Yosef ben Yoezer gufe miflag palig b'smicha. He himself argued the machlokes started with Yosef ben Yoezer. It didn't start after Yosef ben Yoezer, so he does have dofi. So the answer is, ki iflag ba b'sof shane debatzar liba. So the argument occurred, the machlokas occurred at the end of Yossi ben Yoezer's life when he didn't have the mental capacity to think as sharply as he had, and that was the source of the first machlokas. So it really wasn't in his youth when he had a sharp mind, but at the very end of his life, that's when machlokasim started amongst Klal Yisrael. Okay, so interesting stuff, I think. So let me just summarize up to this point. So we saw that Yossi ben Yoezer, again, just factually, is part of the first set of Zugos. And the first set of Zugos is him and Yossi ben Yochanan, two Yossis. So Yossi ben Yoezer, the Gemara says, based on the Mishnah, that the Eshkolos died, or the Eshkolos were Mevatel. So what does that mean? So the first Gemara that we did says that really an Eshkol is Isha Kolbo, and Rashi says that refers to an individual who has Yiras Chet, Gmilas Chasadim, and Torah. And really, Yossi ben Yoezer was the last one from Moshe that had that. And he also, it says that they were the last ones, or he was the last one to learn like Moshe. So our question was, what does that mean to learn like Moshe? And then the Gemara seems to have a Havamina, a thought that Yossi ben Yoezer was the last individual or leader to have few flaws, or I guess no flaws. And then the answer the Gemara says is no, that really what it means is that there was no machloksim until the end of the life of Yossi ben Yoezer, but really Yossi ben Yoezer it was because he was older and he couldn't really think sharply, but until Yossi ben Yoezer and including him, there were no machloksim in Klal Yisrael. There was no arguments. So we have to understand, again, I want to understand what it means they learned like Moshe, and is there a tie-in to the idea of Moshe Rabbeinu? I think there is, of course. So this is the first point in the shiur. So let's move on. So I want to try to answer this at this point. Let's try to answer these questions. So if you look in source number 6, if you have the source sheet, the Tosfos Yontif on Maseches Sota, on that Mishnah, he brings down a machlokas about what it means eshkol. So he says, "Badlu eshkolos." Look at source number 6. Perish or Bartanura isha kolbo. So he says isha kolbo. Klomar torasam ms miblidofi v'shichacha u'machlokas. It means that their Torah was truth, without any doubt or any flaw, and any memory loss and no machloksim. So Rashi be Gemara. So Rashi on the Gemara, which is funny because Rashi says differently. He says that it's Yiras Chet Torah and Gemilas Chasadim. The Mishnah Kasav Adime and Loya Machlokas Bechachme Yisrael Kulon Hayu Omrim Devarim Kinesinasan LeMoshe Misinai. So it says that there was never machlokas in the Chachme Yisrael, and everything was like it was given to Moshe Misinai. They were the first pair or group that argued with regard to smichas korbanos on Yontif. It was the first one. Adkam. The Rambam perish eshkolos kinoi al adam hakolel hamidos hamaalos v'achachmos lefiminehem. So the Rambam says that eshkolos is referring to a person. It's from the word kolel, which means to like include or group. Include, categorize. So he includes, it's an individual that includes all the midos, the great personality traits, and the chachmos, lefimi nehem, based on their different species, meaning their different categories. V'hu masha amru eshkolos isha kolbo. So there's a machlukas brought down in the Tosfos Yom Tov as to what eshkol means. Does eshkol mean that the Torah was mibli dofi v'shechicha u'machlukas? Or does eshkol mean that really it's referring to the personality traits and the chachmos that these individuals maintained. But what exactly does it mean in general? What's the concept of Yossi ben Yoezer being the, can we define these Gemaras being the idea of learning like Moshe and that it ended with them? Like what exactly is the Gemara trying to teach us about these individuals, about Yossi ben Yoezer in specific? So those are the questions. So maybe the idea is like this. So you see that there's a machlokas whether eshkol is a reference to midos, like the Rambam says, midos hamaolos v'achachmos, or is it the idea of the Torah itself, that it's a Torah without shechicha and without dofi and without machlokos. So there's two ideas being referenced here. One is the clarity of thought. the ability to think in an abstract way, but also with a certain clarity. And that's the first idea. That's one idea of Eshkol. Like the Tosfos Yontov mentions, Eshkol is an individual who has like a certain level of clarity of thought, clarity of svara, of theory. He's not really, he's got a certain potential, a certain intellectual ability. But the other idea of Eshkol, like I said, is really midos focus, like Rashi says on the Gemara. So what does it mean? What does it mean that they learn like Moshe? So there's two possibilities. I think one possibility that they learned like Moshe is based on the concept, like Tosfos is saying, that they had a certain ability to be precise in their ability to think. And that's why Tosfos uses the word dukya, which means precision, means exactness. So what that's teaching you is that Yossi ben Yoezer was the last individual who had the abstract capabilities within the Mesorah to be able to perceive things in a clear and unified manner. And once he died, so that idea, once there was a loss within that, so then the Mesorah was forever changed after he died. But the other idea, I think, which is similar to Moshe, is the dedication and the lifestyle, the perfection that the individual has and his ability to use that perfection to gain knowledge. And once again, Moshe Rabbeinu was the epitome of the individual perfection to the point where his whole life was dedicated to knowledge and was dedicated in the pursuit of knowledge. So the idea of Yossi ben Yoezer was that he was completely able to dedicate himself. Up to Yossi ben Yoezer, individuals were able to or were capable of dedicating themselves in the same way Moshe was able to dedicate himself in terms of their service of God fully. And in that way, the Mesorah was preserved in the same way from Moshe Rabbeinu up till Yossi ben Yoezer. But after Yossi ben Yoezer, it seems like the ability or that concept of dedicating yourself in the same way Moshe had done was lost, was forgotten. And I want to do another Gemara to highlight what I mean by that because it's a little vague. But you'll see from the next Gemara that we do that it'll hopefully become clear. But again, so what's the idea that they learned like Moshe? So there's two concepts. One idea that they learned like Moshe is that they had the same precision of thought, the same exactness of thought that after them, once the Mesorah was disrupted, so that was lost. And now, yes, we give svaras and our svaras are good sometimes and sometimes they're not, but our precision of thought is lacking. And that's why we're not able to come to a unified concept as to what the Gemara means or what the Torah is saying. There's always machluksim. There's always different possibilities. But they had a different level of thought. They had a different level of abstraction and clarity, and that was lost after they died. Or the other possibility is it's referring to a certain personality trait, a personality type, an ability to dedicate oneself to the life of knowledge and Torah to a degree that others aren't able to do. But I want to show you from the next Gemara what I mean by that, why it's similar to Moshe. It's a very good, interesting Gemara. Okay? So before you ask me questions, because I know there's a lot of questions, let's do this Gemara, and then hopefully the idea will come alive. So next Gemara is interesting Gemara in itself. So the Gemara says in Bava Basra, the question is, let's say a guy doesn't want to leave his inheritance to his kids. So the Mishnah says over there in source number 7, HaKosef es nechasav l'achirim, v'iniach es banav, masha asa asoy, ala'in ruach hacham no chaymanu. So if a guy says, I'm going to leave my property and my money to somebody else, like a friend of mine, and not to my kids. So the Mishnah says you're allowed to do that, but it's not really such a great thing. The Chachamim are not really happy with an individual who cuts his children out of his will. So Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, but Rav Shimon ben Gamliel argues, and he says, Im lo hayu banav noagim kishura zachor letov. So he says that if your son isn't really acting appropriately, so then it's a good thing. You're remembered for the good. So the Machlokas in the Mishnah is whether or not a person, if they have a son, not a Rasha, but he's an Enoch Shura, like he's not really following in the path of the Torah, and he's not really keeping halacha, should you leave your inheritance to that son? So the first side holds that you should, and it would be wrong not to. And then the other side holds, well, this is what the Gemara is going to take up, whether there's a side that holds that way. And the other side holds, no, that if your son is off the path, off the derech, then you're actually, it's a good thing to not leave him money. You're not supposed to leave him money. You should cut him out. All right, so the Gemara is, do this Gemara, and then we'll, like I said, we'll come to that idea of Yossi ben Yoezer. So the Gemara says, Yibaylehu. So Gemara asks a question. Mi palig rabbanon aleha d'rav Shimon Gamliel ola. So the question is kind of what I just said, which is, do the rabbanon argue and say that if your son is off the path, off the derech, that it's a good thing to cut him out of the will? Or do they say no, that they agree with Rav Shimon Gamliel that if your son is off the path, then you should cut him out? They agree. But if they're not off the path, then of course that's where the machlokas. Then of course they would say, and even Rav Shimon Gamliel would agree, that you should include them, and it would be wrong to cut them out. So do the Chacham argue or not? That's the question. So now we have the story. Tashma, it's a weird, another strange story. Tashma, Yosef ben Yoezer, hayelo bein, shelo haya noe kishira. So Rav Yosef ben Yoezer, which is the, hopefully if you're paying attention, it's the person that we're focusing the shir on. So he had a son that was not really on the derech. He wasn't kshura, he wasn't proper kasher. Havale Elisa de Dinari. So Rav Yosef ben Yoezer, he was very wealthy and he had a treasure chest full of dinarim. And it says, Kom Akdisha. And instead of leaving it to his son, he was makdish it to the mikdash, all these dinarim. So azil nasiv bas gadil klile diyanai malka. So his son, who was cut out of his father's will, goes off and marries the crown weaver of the daughter of the crown weaver of Yanai. So ulida debisu. So the daughter-in-law, Rav Yosef ben Yoezer, the son's wife, gives birth. Zavinle Benisa. So he goes to buy her a fish, because that's a good, you know, that next time if your wife has a baby, you can always get him a fish. You know, a fish is a good present. Instead of jewelry, you buy him a fish. So he bought his wife a fish as a thank you for having the child. So Kara Ashgachba Margalisa. So they opened up the fish. She opened up the fish and she saw that there was a great big pearl inside the fish. So she hit the jackpot. So Amale, so she said to him, Lo timtia l'malka, don't bring this margalis, this pearl, to the melech. Deshakli lo minach b'dmei klili, because they're going to rip you off. You know, you'll ask them how much it's worth, and they'll cheat you, and they'll say, oh, it's only worth, a quarter, and they're going to rip you off, so don't take it to the king. Zil amtia l'gabe gizbari, go take it to the mikdash, to the gizbar, the person in the mikdash that collects the tzedakah and the hekdesh. Velo tishayma at, you don't do it yourself. Don't try to evaluate the price yourself. And don't even say to the gizbar, oh, I'm going to give this pearl that's worth $10 million to you. No, don't say anything. Let them give an honest assessment of what its value is. So dami rasa l'gvok, misi rasa l'hedyot. Because in Amira, if you do say, oh, this pearl is $10 million, if you say that, then it's as if you gave it over to a hedyot. You're going to owe them that amount. So Ela l'shaimua inu, let them assess the value of this pearl. So Amtia, he brought it to them. So it says Shamua bitzlisri ilasa dininari. So they evaluated this pearl and they said it was 13 times the value of Yosef ben Yoezer's treasure. It was like 13 treasure chests full of dinar. So Amr Lei, they said, so he said to them, Sheva Ika, no, sorry, they said to him, the Kohanim and the Gizbar, they said, Sheva Ika, we need this pearl, because Rashi says they needed the pearl for the Urim Metumim. So they said, we need this pearl, but we only have 7 Ilyasa, 7 treasure chests of Dinarim to give you Shisleka, but we're lacking 6. So it's worth 13. Do the math here. So we only have 7 in the Mikdash. We'll give you 7, but we don't have 6. So Amar Luhu, so he said, Sheva Havuli, fine, give me 7. Shis Harehe Mukdashos L'Shamayim. And you get to keep the extra, the change. Keep the change there. So you keep the 6. So he did end up, the son ended up doing some type of tshuva, because he ends up being makdish, extra money that he could have taken, that they would have owed him to the mikdash. So amdu v'chasvu, so they wrote, because they used to take, they used to have like a receipt of who gave what. So they wrote down, Yosef ben Yoezer hichnis achas, that Yosef ben Yoezer, he donated 1 treasure chest to the Mikdash, uvino hichnes shesh, and his son donated 6. The Ika da'amri, Yosef ben Yoezer hichnes achas, some want to say that they wrote down in their book, in their receipt book, that Yosef ben Yoezer gave 1, uvino hotzi sheva, but his son took 7. So the Gemara is going to explain. Midika amri hichnes mechlal de shapir avad. So from the fact that it says that Yossi ben Yoezer gave six, it sounds like his son gave six. It sounds like Yossi ben Yoezer did a good thing by cutting him out, because in the end of the day, the son ends up giving, you see from the, there's some type of hashgacha here, that the son ended up getting money and he ends up giving it to the Mikdash. So you see from the way it worked out that it was really a good thing that Yossi ben Yoezer did by cutting him out, which we'll have to explain a little bit. So the Gemara says, Adarabah, opposite, Midaka Amri Hotzi Mechlad Alav Shapir Avin. No, the other way of learning the Gemara is that they wrote Hotzi, that he shouldn't have taken seven. He should have taken less. And the fact that he took all seven, that was all seven treasure chests of dinarim, was a bad thing. It was really a negative, and it's because Yossi ben Yoezer did the wrong thing, and it's really a negative. So the question is, how do you look at it? Do you say, oh, he did the right thing by giving six to the Mikdash, or he did the wrong thing by taking seven? He should have taken less out of the Mikdash. So then the Gemara answered. The Gemara says, Michlad alav shapir avid el mahal lek lamashu mina. You can't learn out from the story. My havi Allah, what's the halacha? Tashma damar le Shmuel Rav Yehuda shina lo tihavi be'avura achasanta v'afilu mibarabisha lebaratava v'choshekim mibar lebrata. So there's another braisa that says that in the name of Rav Yehuda, that you should never give an inheritance from a bad son to a good son, or a son to a daughter. Meaning to say that the Chazal Chachamim hold that even if your son is not kshura, you should still give them the money and give them the inheritance. It's not right to cut somebody out of your will, even if your son is not exactly on the straight path. So there's a machlokas here, whether or not it's a good thing to cut your son out of the will if your son is not on the right path. So according to Yossi ben Yoezer and Rav Shimon Gamliel, so it really was the appropriate thing to do. And according to the Chachamim, they argue, they say, no, your son is your son, and you should give them your inheritance, even if they're not on the straight and narrow path. So it's an interesting machlokas. I want to try to define it, but before we get to that, so what do you see about Yossi ben Yoezer? This ties into the Moshe Rabbeinu thing. See, Yossi ben Yoezer, so a normal person, an average person like myself, or probably most people on this Zoom call, on this Zoom share, so to cut out your kids from a will is a very difficult emotional thing to do. Even if your kid is not a Rasha, but they're not on the right path, it's natural for a person to want to give their money to their children. And the fact that Yossi ben Yoezer was makdish his money, and he didn't really want to give his son the money, it shows you that he really, his attachment to, you know, to knowledge and his attachment to Mikdash and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was far greater than his attachment to family. He didn't really have those natural emotions, or at least he didn't give in to those natural emotions, but it seems like he didn't really have the natural emotion of giving to his son, because his son really wasn't an embodiment of Torah. So we see that Yossi ben Yoezer was like this. But who else was like this? Moshe Rabbeinu. Because we see that Moshe Rabbeinu, he always had to be in a state where he was ready to communicate with God. And in doing so, he separated from Tzipora. And the Gemara even says by Moshe Rabbeinu that his children, there's a Chazals and Midrashim say that his children also went off the Derech, that Gershom and Eliezer went off the Derech. And the reason being, I know there's other Chazals that say not, but there are Chazals that say that they were off the Derech. And the reason is because Moshe Rabbeinu was so attached to the pursuit of Chachmas Hashem that his main attachment in life was no longer his family, and he put Hashem first, like V'chol Me'odecha, like the Pasuk says. So Yossi ben Yoezer had the same quality, had the same aspect in his ability to completely void his familial emotions and his natural emotions towards his family for the sake of God, for the sake of pursuing Chachmas Hashem. So that's what I think is the Gemara is trying to show you. There's an interesting, unique comparison of Yossi ben Yoezer to Moshe. But back to the original idea of what does it mean that he learned like Moshe? So it means that he had the same ability to put himself in the psychological and emotional state of Moshe, which was that his primary was God, even more so than his family, than his natural emotions towards his family. And that's why the Masorah was really pristine until Yossi ben Yoezer. So after that point, it seems like after that point, individuals did not have the capacity to be able to exist on that level, to be able to exist in a way where their primary was really HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the extent where they really were willing to like cut themselves off from their family if they needed to and if necessary. So I think that's what the Gemara is teaching us about Yossi ben Yoezer, that he was, what does it mean that he learned like Moshe? He learned like Moshe because it's a reflection of his ability to think and his ability to abstract and also be precise at the same time. Like we always search for a unified theory, physicists search for a unified theory. So unified theory is the clearest idea of how things work. So Yossi ben Yoezer had that, just like Moshe had that. And others after that, they failed in the intellectual sense. And you see, even at the end of Yossi ben Yoezer's life, he started failing intellectually. And that's where Machloksim emerged, from a failure, intellectual failure. So one side holds that the intellectual abilities up to Yossi ben Yoezer were preserved within these Bali Masora, but after there was a failure on the part of the Bali Masora, and that's when you have Machloksim. The other side holds it's a failure of personality, it's a failure of perfection. That really Yossi ben Yoezer and the individuals before him that preceded him until Moshe, they were on a certain level of perfection that others after that point, others in future generations weren't able or capable of coming to, and that's why the Masora was affected in a negative way after they died. So either the Masora was altered because of the intellectual drop-off, or the Masora was altered because of the drop-off in the ability of man to dedicate himself to Torah in that way, in the way that Yossi ben Yoezer, and we also saw by Moshe, of course. But what is this machlokes? What's this machlokes about the inheritance? Just one last point, and then I'll open up to questions. So it seems like, I don't know if this is more philosophical or halachic, but something that came to mind when I was learning this, when I was looking at this Gemara, was it seems like the question is it if your son is on the, how will it affect your son if you cut him out of his will and he's not kshira? So there's two different approaches. The approach of Chazal, Chachamim, are saying that if you cut the son off, it'll actually result in a negative. And that's perhaps why he's criticized. So when you cut your son off, if he's not on the proper path and you cut them out of his will, how is it going to affect the child? So the machlokas is, do you say that in general, if a son is cut off, it's going to move them further away from Torah and further away from the legacy of the father? Or do you say, no, that really it's musar, that the father has to give the son musar at the end of his life, and he says, you don't get my money. So perhaps it would have the opposite effect. So the machlokas is, it's more of a psychological machlokas. Do you say that cutting a child off out of the will, is that really something that'll motivate a child to change for the good? Or do you say no, that it's really, it's like the Chazal say no, that it's really a negative. That they ain't, it says Masha Asoy in the Mishnah, but it says ain't Ruach Chacham Nochem Menu, that they don't really support this type of approach. So the question is why? What's the machlokas? So that's what I'm saying. The machlokas is, how do you view the effect of cutting off the child from the inheritance vis-a-vis the child? Do you say that it's really a positive because it'll draw the child to doing tshuva because they recognize why they were cut off? Or do you say no, that really the rejection by the father is going to lead to further rejection by the son, and it's really a negative, so you're better off including the son in your inheritance in your will? But halachically, there's no... See, everyone agrees halachically, masha asa asoy, that if you do it, you do it, and it works, that you can cut your child off. The question is, philosophically, should you do it or not? Is that really the better, which approach is better? It's like a Kirov question. Like, should you be more stern and give tochacha in that way? Or should you embrace the person and try to accept them? And by doing that, I think society nowadays is more towards the acceptance approach. But I think that's a machlokes in Chazal. But I brought in that story to highlight the idea of Yossi ben Yoezer. You see from the story itself that he did cut his child off. And it seems like I'm trying to learn out a chiddush, that he saw that he was like Moshe, or at least like he learned like Moshe. We saw he had these personality traits. But you see this connection that Moshe was completely dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the sense that, and to the point where he separated from his family, and his familial relationships were secondary to his relationship with God. And so too, Yossi ben Yoezer. That was like a special type of ability and capacity to do that. All right? Any questions? Somebody's got to have a question. Yes. Rabbi Unger.
Yeah,
Joseph and Eliezer's son.
Yeah.
He married someone that was Jewish?
Yeah.
Not Jewish.
She was Jewish, but she was like, it's like, I think Yanai was like a bad king, or he was like an evil king, so it's like almost like an indication that it was like part of his rebellion against his father by marrying her. She was Jewish, but I think the family of Yanai was considered, because it wasn't Yanai's daughter, it was the crown weaver of Yanai's daughter. So she was Jewish, but
What's a crown weaver?
I guess they wore like these wool. I guess they wore crowns that were woven out of rope or whatever. I don't know, reed. I have no idea. I don't know. I'm just making this stuff up. A crown weaver, that was a job that was for Yanai, the king. So he married the daughter of the crown weaver. But
she was Jewish.
She was, yeah, she was Jewish. Yeah, she was Jewish.
Okay, so it's not a total rebellion then.
No, it wasn't a total rebellion, no. So, like, that's why I think the Gemara is interesting. That's why you're making a good point. It's not a Russia. I think with a Russia, you shouldn't. It's talking about, it says Enoch Shura. So it sounds like the child is like not necessarily a Russia. He's not wicked. He's just not Shura. He's not on the right path. So to me, the Gemara is saying that if the child were a Russia, I haven't looked at the Rishonim on this, but if the child were a Russia, so Vadai, everyone would agree that you cut him off. The question is, an Enoch Shura, if the child is an Enoch Shura, is it better to cut them off or is it better to embrace them? It's like an in-between type person. They're not really off the derech completely, and they're not wicked, but they're not following halacha. Like they don't keep all the mitzvos. They don't keep they don't wear tefillin, or I don't know. I'm just surmising, right? It's a question that exists in the Bizman Hazeh. How should you approach people who aren't religious, you know, but they're not necessarily Rishonim? Is it better to give them tochacha and just, I mean, nowadays, tochacha is not viewed in the same way as it was in the past, but is it better to give them tochacha or better to embrace them? That's like the Chabad approach. The Chabad approach is embrace them and accept them, and by doing so, they'll end up doing tshuva and come to Yahadus. The other approach is the more aggressive approach. Show them why they're wrong, and if you show them why they're wrong, then they'll ultimately do tshuva. All right, there's another piece, but maybe we'll do it a different shir. It's also historical, so I'll just mention this. There's a medrash that says that Yossi ben Yoezer was killed by his nephew. I forgot his name. What was his name? It's in the medrash in source number 9. His name was, it's in here, I think Yosef Meshicha, that was his name. So his name was Yosef Meshisa. So that was the nephew of Yossi ben Yoezer. So there's a weird story there that, I'll just tell you the story and then you guys can think about it. There's a weird story where it says that his nephew was riding on a horse on Shabbos, and he was bringing what he was going to crucify, because that's what he was going to crucify, it says, his uncle, Yossi ben Yoezer. So Yossi ben Yoezer said to him, they have this exchange where basically the nephew wants to crucify him, and Yossi ben Yoezer says to him, whatever God, look how God has rewarded those who hate him, or those who are those who are machis him, which he was referring to the nephew, even more so those who follow his will. And then the nephew said, but you follow his will. So he said, if God if God treats me this way, how much more so is he going to treat somebody like you, somebody who's machis HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So this information had a profound effect on his nephew, to the point where he constructed a whole way to be able to be killed via all the methods of Misa of Sanhedrin. So this Medrash goes through how he set it up, like how he could hang himself and behead himself. He set it up. I don't know how he did it. The Mishnah, the Medrash goes through it, how he set it up that he could be killed in all these different ways, in the Chenek and all simultaneously. And then ultimately, Yossi ben Yoezer, who's killed, he says like he was zoche to Olam Haba by doing this, by killing himself with these methods. So it's also, so I don't want to define that. I mean, maybe we'll take it up a different time because we're running out of time here. But it's an interesting story. I do have a svara for it, but maybe we'll take it up a different time. All right? Okay, so hopefully it was clear. Any other any questions? If it's not clear, just...
One more question.
Yeah, of course.
When you say there's a machlokas about smichas karbonos.
Yeah.
What do you mean, smicha mean putting your hands?
Yeah, by shlomim on yontif, are you allowed to do smicha or not? That was machlokas. I think I did that gemara. It's in chagiga.
Why would it be usher?
Why would it be usher? I forgot. I can't remember the reason offhand. I remember doing the gemara, but I totally see. I'm not like Yossi ben Yoezer. I have a lot of shichachas in my learning. I definitely did the gemara and chagiga. I just don't remember the svara, or I don't remember the reason why. So, but okay,
yeah. You said one more thing. You said like by sota.
Yeah.
They stopped the sota because too many people would be killed.
Yeah, there was so much adultery that all the they wouldn't be able to. There would be too much killing amongst these women. Hmm. Yeah,
wouldn't
interesting.
Wouldn't that be a good deterrent?
I guess you have to weigh the idea of deterrent. It's the same question as the Gemara. You have to weigh the whether that's a good deterrent or not. Meaning, is killing people on a regular basis a good deterrent, or will it just draw people to do it more, and it'll just turn people away? So, and also, there is an idea of the Mikdash and Sanhedrin not being bloody and not having the not becoming like a bloody court system. So I would say that they have to balance the deterrent factor with the perception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being, you know, is enjoying murder or enjoying killing. So I think
they're destroying Kedushas Yisrael.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's true. But I guess it would also be like, I guess they deemed it that it would be more negative to have this perception of God. That it would be more negative for the Masorah if people thought that God was like a murderous existence, you know, murderous being. So they had to weigh that, you know.
So being Mevato at the Arisa is like Horosha there?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Let's look at it. You know what? I was trying to skip over that part because it wasn't relevant to the Shir, but definitely I'm pretty sure that that's the idea that it's saying. It was Horosha. I mean, there was two. There was the Ratzchanin, that there, when there were murderers, they got rid of Egla Rufa, because I guess it would happen so often. And the other one is when there was Menachem, adulterers, they got rid of Sotah.